Welcome to the Leadership Podcast, brought to you by LifeWest, the chiropractic college. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Oberstein.
And I'm your host, Dr. Mary Oberstein.
And we're excited to have you join us as we bring special guests in the world of health, leadership, business success, and chiropractic. Our mission is to create a brighter future for humanity, and we are thrilled to walk this journey with you.
Enjoy this episode, and thank you for being with us today.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to another one of our LifeWest Leadership Lines. My name is Dr. Ron Oberstein. I'm your host today. I'm president of Life Chiropractic College West. And today, we have a phenomenal practitioner, someone I've known for I don't know how many years, Liz. I'm probably 30 years plus. Dr. Liz Anderson Peacock. Welcome, Dr. Liz.
Thank you so much. Hence the gray. I've known you that long.
I'd have it also, but you know, nowhere to show it. But look at all this, right? You know, I got the snow coming down. But let me share a little bit with Dr. Liz. I really don't think you need an introduction. You've been around so much lecturing all over the world, and the things that you've done in chiropractic. You obviously graduated, I believe, 1986, correct, from CMCC. You practice in Barrie, Ontario, about an hour north of Toronto, and taught for the ICPA, was in the first diplomat class, pediatrics diplomat class of the ICA, and you did regulatory work on your board. You've just done it all, you know, from teaching to doing regulatory work to practicing to all the things that you've done. That's just amazing. And but I really think, you know, the coolest thing is for me at least, and if people, if they don't know your story, we might not get into it today, but you know, how you take adversity and you're able to turn adversity, what some would call adversity, and make it into a positive, right? And that's really an art, you know, it really is. And I think for our audience to know this, you know, that in order to take something like that, you know, there has to be ways that you can be communicating to yourself. I think people always think this communication is just like me to you, right? Instead of me to me, you know? And I think probably the biggest, most important form of communication is me to me, right? What are we saying in our own heads? What's that voice? What's that conversation, you know, going on? But I'd like to jump into conversation with you. I know you do a lot of work with linguistics and communication and stuff like that. And I think it'd be a great thing for our listeners. If you're willing to go in that direction, we can do that.
Let's do it.
All right. Let's talk about it. You know, what would you say, and I know there's major elements in communication, but what would you say are some of the key points off the top of your head right now, what comes up?
Oh, well, certainly what we've said, the tone in which we've said it, how it's been received, how has it landed? Because if we're giving feedback or talking to someone else, of course, there's a person on the other side that needs to receive it, how they've interpreted it. And then our feedback also is, did we actually communicate what we intended to communicate? So it's what we said and what we thought we said.
Yeah.
And those are sort of really the key elements, because it is about information that's being transmitted, it's being received, it's being interpreted, it's being responded to or not, depending on the flavor and the tonality and our body language in which we're also emoting words.
Yeah, I love it. You know, and I've always learned that, like, you know, the three things that I teach here is like, you know, what you say, what you think you said, and what they heard. And they could be three different things, right? And then nothing gets done because the communication just goes all over the place, right? And, you know, and then no one's taking takeaways from it. No one's getting anything. That happens in meetings also, right? You know, have a meeting with a group of people, you know, and what I said, what I think I said, and what they heard could be three different things. And that's why it's always important in any communication to, when you wrap up, like, you know.
Exactly.
Like, what do we get? Go on.
Two very simple examples. I remember one time I said they had inflammation, and they went to their GP and said that they had an infection. Like, yeah, there's a huge difference. But in their mind, they didn't understand what I was saying. And another time I remember asking a patient if they had any numbness and tingling down their arm, and they said no. And then later on you find out, no, my arm's falling asleep. And I'm like, ugh, you know, so you use multiple words to be able to communicate a thought process. So numbness and tingling, pins and needles, arm falling asleep, you know, so because one of those may land on the patient understanding it better. Yeah. I remember one time with a kid even, and they were asking me about my dog. And I said, yeah, I have a Labrador, I have two Labradors. And they said, that's great. Do you have a dog? I'm like, there you go. They didn't know a Labrador was a dog. Therefore, I didn't have a dog until I said it.
Yeah. And, you know, and it's so true. And you know what? I think, you know, we could talk about it in the practice and in a chiropractic practice, but also at home too, you know, in our lives, right? Where, you know, I thought I told you to get the milk. I didn't hear that, you know, or whatever, or possibly, usually for me, my wife communicates very well. It's me forgetting, but, you know, something where you think you communicated something. And I really think that probably the biggest mishap between people, whether it's in a business, in a doctor setting, where in your person, in a personal life, 90% of the issues are communication, right? And you know, and then they lead to the other stuff, to loss of affinity, where I don't want to be around that person, I don't think the same as them, you know, that kind of thing, right? But it's usually just communication that kind of gets broken somewhere and never gets fixed, you know.
Yeah, I think there's always this reflective piece on that's really helpful and bringing it back into the practice at the end of the day. And I like to say, did I communicate the way I wanted to? If I'm reflective, if I'm contemplating my day on what things went really well and what went on with that and what things were there some challenges with and what went on with that, where was my mindset? Where was the patient's mindset? Where did we maybe miscommunicate, misinterpret each other? Another example I can give you with one of my grandkids, because I'm trying to teach them to ask for what they want, be very, very clear in their ask so there's no miscommunication. But a typical example was one time, the oldest granddaughter, she said to me, she said, I get called Gemma. She's like, Gemma, can I have some juice? And I said, Gemma, can I have some juice? And I said, yes. She's like, can I get some now in the fridge? And I said, yes, you may. Because what she really wanted was me to just fill in all the blanks and interpret. And that's where we learn not to actually be very clear in our communication.
Yeah.
And you know, it's really key as chiropractors, because we have not just communication through observation and through what we're hearing and feedback that way. We also have communication through touch. And so we know when we're coming into an area and there's resistance, now you have to communicate what's going, or you have to understand what's going on and maybe ask some questions. If there is that emotionality with a patient, ooh, what's going on there? Do I need to step into that and ask other questions on what's going on? Or is it the time to step back and find, as you said, a kind way of asking the question so that the patient doesn't feel obligated to answer if they're just not ready?
Yeah. And you know what's interesting, too, is that, and you probably had it, I know I've had it, where maybe I had laryngitis, you know, from a weekend, or I was at a ball game or whatever, something like that, whatever it was, right? And I come in the office and I can't talk. And I'm so, you know, they would pin a badge on me just saying, you know, laryngitis, you know, can't. But it's so interesting to listen and not speak, because how many times do we occupy our day, you know, just continually talking and not receiving? So, you know, and not listening. And it's very interesting that it's kind of like if you put blindfolds on somebody for a day, you know, the other senses kind of heighten, right? And we see. You know, and I think part of our communication is, you know, and I fall into this category, you know, can sharpen listening skills.
Absolutely. The active listening skills, yeah. And to be curious when we're hearing information. So if it's not clear, by the way that we can ask the question, we can engage the person even more. And certainly both of us, I'm sure, have seen the scenario that when you actually ask patients questions in their self-responsibility of their piece that they need to do, if we keep telling them what to do, they never learn and take true ownership. I shouldn't say never, but rarely. But if they can be transformed through a question, that changes everything, because now they're much more, the cortex is engaged with you, and now you can kind of move forward. You know, a typical example, I remember early on in practice with patients, of every once in a while you're giving patients stretches and things like that. And I remember thinking, how do I know how long this patient actually needs to stretch that quadricep or whatever it was? How do I actually know that? Because only their body really knows it. And so I thought, I changed my whole philosophy around it, where I kind of gave them an overview, but ultimately at the end of the day, this is the stretch I want you to do, but I want you to be present in your body and you feel the stretch. And if you don't feel the stretch, you might not actually need to do it. And, but try, and if you are in the stretch and all of a sudden you lose sort of that sense of knowing where you are in the stretch, then come out of it, go back into it so that you can re-engage your nervous system and your muscular system that way. And boy, oh boy, did that ever make a difference? Because we know darn well, if you say to a patient, count for 30 seconds, their earphones are in, they're watching TV, they do their stretch, and they're going 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 30, like they're not even present. And the whole idea in me, in my mind, in chiropractic, is to be present with your body so that you can move your energy in whatever direction and the nuances that you have to know what your next step is going to be, right? So if you're doing something and you're hurting yourself, you want that information immediately before you go any further.
And what I'm hearing from you is that it's all about the feedback, you know, whether it's our own internal feedback, because that's what you're asking, to just become more aware, right? But in the communication cycle, let's talk about feedback, because I think, you know, that we have been, but you know, dive deep into that for me on a feedback level, because I think that a lot of people think feedback means that, or that we interpret feedback as somebody giving us information about what we said, or they're dissecting what we said. So let me give you feedback on that. You know, instead of using it on a neurological level, we're constantly, you know, we are a feedback machine, right? We're a negative cycle, right? Where the body needs to have information. No information comes in, the body will just stop, right? The nervous system, it doesn't know what's going on. So it's a negative feedback cycle. So share with us on a communication level like that.
So feedback, when we receive it, it's information coming back at us. And you're right. Quite often people interpret it as a complaint or, you know, something that's negative versus really using it to our advantage on just saying it is just what it is. Now, you can assign meaning to that if you want. But from the person giving you the information, first of all, who is it? Is it someone you need to really pay attention to if it's a mentor, a trusted advisor, or is it someone who's just complaining, right? And it's like, yep, thank you. And then off you go. So it really depends who the feedback's coming from. And there's a number of things we can do, whether it's in our internal body or if we're receiving it from another individual, is we can be like an ostrich. We can just simply ignore it. And I've done that. Sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't work. We could argue with the person giving us feedback. You know, an example I can give you is where a family may have left the practice and your staff has done their 3 calls and then now it's up to you to communicate. And rather than being curious and leaving it as an open, sometimes chiros argue with why they should be coming back in, meaning the patient. I'm like, ooh, how's that working out for you? Right? And rather than saying, hey, I'm curious, how are you doing? Well, just a courtesy call. We had you on a schedule. We're off base. I'm letting you know that I know. I also don't want to be pestering you. Would you like me to put your file on hold? Would you like me to close your file? Your file's going to be here forever anyways, blah, 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 blah. And you just leave it as an open. So very, very different. You don't want to argue with the person giving you feedback because now it escalates. Unless you're in a debate, and a debate is designed to argue and to create opposing forces because that's the nature of a debate. The third one is where some people just give up. They quit, right? They're exhausted from it. And that's the one that I would say really, really discourages me when I hear about that. Rather than people being very curious, they just go, okay, you know what? I called 3 times and I'm getting a negative response, so I'm not going to do it again. I hate doing that. Versus using the feedback, fine-tuning, how could you do it maybe a little bit differently? And the silly example I give on that is if you can imagine ever taking a infant and they start to walk and you say, you're going to get 5 tries. You don't get in 5, forget it. We're going to quit. Right? These children just know that the answer no is a premeditated yes. And so this is really how I like to think of it is how do I use my mind at getting into information in a completely different way? And we're, you know, it's nothing is ever really a straight line. Rarely is it a straight line. So if I am driving my car on the highway, I may appear to have a straight runway on the highway, like a straight, you know, I'm not turning, but what am I doing? Well, I'm feedbacking with my steering wheel. I'm always moving that's fine-tuning. For me to fly from Toronto to San Francisco, the pilot's on autopilot much of the pilot, the plane is on autopilot much of the time. The pilots are on when they need to be, takeoff, landing, and other particular times. However, that plane is constantly micro adjusting to get from point A to point B. And so I think when we can think of it that way, we get ourselves out of the way, and then we can be more productive. One of the tools that's really worked well for me is I put my mind into the space of someone else sort of to get me out of the way. And I would say, for example, if I was adjusting a woman who is pregnant and I'm doing Webster technique and I'm not getting the results I anticipated as feedback, right? Then I would think, okay, so if I was Larry, what would I do? What am I not currently seeing yet? What do I need to do more of? What do I need to do less of? And boom, download, it comes in, and it's rarely what I ever expect. Yeah. And so it gets us out of the way as well.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting because what you were just saying about getting feedback like that, right? It's so interesting how we create stories. And people live in these stories. I mean, you know, someone gets divorced. And so you say, oh, well, you know, what happened? And then they go through this whole story about he or she did this and they did this and blah, 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 blah. You know, and that story becomes who we are, right? It becomes, we start, I don't know what the word is, but we start, you know, holding that on every cellular level of our body, right? And the truth is, I'm not saying that that stuff didn't happen. I'm not saying that she or he didn't cheat or any of that, but that's the story. And the truth is, it's really the relationship didn't work for me. Boom. End of story, right? And the energy around that is so different, and the reactions, you know, but I guess what I'm trying to say is that a lot of times in communication, we're looking for reactions from other people. We want people to back up our place that we're at, right? Our sense of you know, give us a sense of loyalty and tell me I'm right, you know, and all that. And we hold that stuff within us, right? Even in practice, like, I don't want to call them anymore. I'm not making phone calls, because that's your story. If the reason to call is to keep the door open, who wouldn't call? I mean, it's like there's no resistance, right? But, you know, it's just so interesting. And I tell you, I walk around, too, with stories in my head, right, around these things. And the truth is that, you know, we can minimize that story, take away all that emotional stuff. And really, you know, we still have our heart. We still have our feelings. But bottom line is, it just didn't work out. Done. End of story. And now I can move on, you know?
Right. Yeah, well, and you know, it's so interesting because it's really about our thought process, which we're creating neural networks around the story, which engage in ourselves. And then we take on, of course, then the actions of that thought process, and then we take on the emotions of it, and then the emotions feedback, if depending on what emotions we're addicted to, get feedback looped into the brain again for the next thought. And you're absolutely right. Is that thought or is that belief true? Or is it an assumption, right?
And it could be true. But it doesn't mean that we have to hold that, you know, in our body, right? That, you know, yes, they cheated on me, right? Okay, but is that the story? The story is it just didn't work out, right? And just kind of, you don't need, go to the movies, you know, you can sit in a 2-hour movie. The truth is you can probably be in for the first 20 minutes, the last 30 minutes, maybe 5 minutes in the middle, and the rest of it is just kind of story around it. And I love watching those stories. But when we live it, like you said, we create that neural network. And the next thing you know, people are leaving my practice. I'm not going to be a success. And, you know, I'm a failure. And then they start literally just having this whole web that becomes that story. You know, it's just so interesting, you know?
Yeah, it is. I mean, you start running a narrative. And, you know, sometimes I'll catch myself and I'm like, where did that belief come from? You know, it's like, wait a minute. And then how I break out of it really easily, I say, is this true for everybody? And I don't mean like the example you just gave, but if it's more of a belief system, like say I'm not good enough, or that might be the byproduct of it, which started when I was first in practice because I wasn't confident. One example I can give is in 2018, I went down the outside of a building with another 1,000 people, set a world record as we were maintaining heart coherence. And I'm scared of heights. But how I got through it was simply the question, if they can do it, I can do it. Why if they're looking like this and this sort of body frame and shape and fitness level, and they're loving what they're doing, I can enjoy the same thing because now I've never done that before. So I can make up whatever type of a scenario I want as I'm in the process doing it, which certainly aided. Mm-hmm. And that's a segue into the beautiful opportunity for colleagues to talk to each other and to be at seminars and to have mentors, and some need coaches to support them a little bit more. Some need consultants to get them organized right from the get-go. There's all these levels, though, in which we can interact, which can, again, you create trusted advisors, you ask for feedback, you get very clear with what you want. Also looking at when there's usually one problem in the practice, the first question I'll often ask people is, well, is this showing up anywhere else in your life, right? The micro goes to the macro goes to the micro. And I think that, again, when we start to question these beliefs, I would define a belief as an interpretation and or a reflection on an event, whether real or imagined, and whether it was actually true. Right. And so we can all have, you know, many, many different events, but it's all how we are in that moment in the interpretation piece. And I granted, no question, if you come from a family background where there was a narrative of stress and defense and distrust, that is hard, much more hardwired versus a very different loving environment built on safety and trust. And so you do have to overcome some of those early childhood adverse events and experiences, for sure.
Yeah. And you know what, the result, you were talking about looking and seeing what you have, that's our feedback, right?
Oh yeah.
100%. And what we choose not to do a lot of times, or what people tend to, it's not that they choose to, they're not even conscious enough or possibly don't want, they just don't look for the feedback. But yet we get feedback everywhere, right? All day in the practice, you're getting feedback all the time. And you know, being able to kind of someone who smells, you know, and the feedback is people are staying further away from you, you know, you didn't get any hugs today, whatever it might be. You know, there's always feedback coming in, you know. But I love what you talked about when you talk about the neural network, because what ends up happening is we end up holding these, I don't know, the beliefs as being self-evident, as being true, right? And then we operate from that standpoint, you know, and a lot of people just, you know, can't break away from what, even if they know where they came from, you know, my mom would walk around saying, money doesn't grow on trees, you're from the wrong side of the tracks, you'll never have what your friends have, you know, that was her story, right? You know, and I listened to it, but I was telling a group yesterday that I remember explicitly when I broke that. I mean, I know exactly where I was in my house, exactly what was going on, what I was eating. And I was like 14 years old. And I said, I will never be like that. And I just broke that and said, I'm not accepting, almost like, you know, I didn't say these words, but almost like my innate rejects that, you know, I'm not letting that in. It's just interesting. But what I love is that we end up that neural web, we can change that.
Oh, 100%. I mean, sometimes it's interesting when I actually go and I think about what am I, so for me, what I do and have for quite a while, which took me to the decision that I made, you know, 6 years ago with an amputation, was I was asking myself, for the feelings I was feeling, what were the thoughts that were generating the chemistry that then created the feelings? And so when I started to explore the thoughts, sometimes I would actually go, that's, why am I doing that? And then I would literally physically do cancel that thought, universe, I'm taking it back. Or it would be delete that program, and then replace it immediately with something that made me feel better or more productive, or giving me the byproduct of just moving me forward in the direction to which I would prefer. Yeah. And I think that's really cool. And so I think that's the other piece that to your questions and comments is that, how have we participated in our own outcome, right? And that's the problem, is when the neural networks are engaged in such a tight program that we've held so for many people for so long, or since being an influential age, that's all we look for. That's all we know to look for. And to have all of a sudden a new level of awareness where it takes a lot of energy for the body to break out of a pattern, to break out of a habit, and to unlatch those neurons and move them to somewhere else that's going to be more productive, it can be done. It just, we have to be conscious and we have to be aware of what we're thinking, how we're experiencing, what we're doing, how we're emoting, how we're, what we're feeling, and then how we're receiving information back. You know, it's often, if you want more love in your life, be more lovable and be more loving, right? And you'll see it, but don't just wait.
Yeah, where's the love? It's not here, you know, and the interesting thing around that is that it's also like who we hang out with. It's where we put ourselves environmentally, right? Because our environment, we are products of our environment, you know, bottom line. And I've had many discussions about this with people where they go, well, no, it's genetics. So really, it's genetics. Well, if you took a person born in Africa and put them in Boston, you know, at birth, you know, after birth, they're going to be a Bostonian. They are not going to, you know, and if you take the Bostonian and put, so our environment dictates so much, you know, around us and our, you know, in the profession, we know that our environment, right, you know, has a profound effect on our nervous system. And if we just put ourselves in positions where we're, who we're hanging out with, what are our thoughts, like our dominant thoughts, like you said, what am I reading? What am I watching? You know, what, you know, at nighttime, am I watching the news? Am I doing all these different things that we can shift and change? Doesn't mean they're bad, just at the time you want to do this, that then you can look at your outcomes. And that's what I love, what you're talking about, the feedback. Then just check your outcomes, right? And almost if we could put our finger in a meter and say, you know, how am I today? Where's my happy meter? You know, that kind of, I love it. You ever walk, you travel a lot, you know, you walk out of an airport situation and there's those three buttons. Tell us how we did today. You know, the red one is really sad. The yellow one is kind of like a straight thing. And the green one is you push green or you do it. They just want feedback, right? And for us to be able to take feedback ourselves, I think it's really just, like you said, just being perceptive and open and being able to pull it in, you know?
You know, it's really interesting with my grandkids. I'm using them as examples because it's just, I think everyone can relate to kids. And one of my grandsons was doing a particular building project and it wasn't working for him. And he was getting so angry and so frustrated. And he kept doing it the same way and kept failing the same way. And I just looked at him really calmly and I just said, so why don't you do that the same way again and get the same results so you can get really mad at yourself? Or maybe we should do something different. What do you need? And you could see his little brain completely stop, like it was like, oh, hadn't thought of that before. Yeah. And made a different decision and he had a different outcome. Yeah. And, you know, the other piece too that I think is really important, I was on a call a few weeks ago with some people from HeartMath. And it was on this idea of compassionate latitude. And I just love it. I love the concept. I love the idea of it. It's really for us as practitioners, especially, but in our lives, is to recognize that we don't know what's going on for the other person in that moment. But why not make the assumption that they're trying to do the best with what they can, with what they know in that time, and give them some grace? Now, granted, there's some people that are not like that. But I would suggest that most people are. And I love that. So when you have a patient that's a little bit more negative or, you know, a little bit more headbutting with us, argumentative, when we back up, they back up. If we move forward into it, they get more aggressive. And it's just a matter of like, hey, what's going on for you today? And it's interesting with so many patients that, especially moms, when they've done what they've done, they brought their child in and they learn new information and then they feel guilt about what their decisions were. And I say, first of all, my intention is never to have you feel guilty. That I recognize I can't control your response to this. But what I can say is now that you know something different, you can make different choices. It's now up to you.
You know, that's so beautiful. And I have to tell you that when we can start communicating like that to people, you know, they're so open to hearing it. There's no, it's compassionate communication, right? Nonviolent communication. And it's just allowing people to just have choices in their lives you know, they will, they, I trust that they will always choose the right choice for them at that time, right? At that time in their life, right? And like your grandson, if it doesn't work for them, they just have to be aware enough to have somebody over their shoulder at some point be able to say, well, why don't we try it maybe this way, maybe, or these few different options that you can do to try and get a different result. And that's beautiful. Liz, thank you. Thank you for sharing the last, you know, 30 minutes with us. And just, I just want to say that, you know, there's ways we can practice from our head, you know, we can practice from our heart, right? Or we can practice from our gut, because a lot of people practice from their gut. They're not thinking, they're not heartful, they're just kind of moving through, you know. And, you know, I feel that you, and not that the gut is bad, everything is right. And I feel that you encompass all of that. I feel that, you know, it's almost like body, mind, and spirit, right? It's such a pleasure. And I'm so excited. And you'll be speaking at the Wave in August. So I'm thrilled about that. And I know that you're going to bring some great stories for our people and allow them to hear that. But just thank you. Thank you for who you are. And, you know, obviously right now you're what? You're 30 something years in? I don't know, 38?
38.
38 years in practice and in chiropractic. And you're, you know, there's no out for us, right? You know, we're in it, you know, and just it can change and it'll move in different directions. But I just love what you're doing. So appreciate you. I hope you really, I hope I communicated that effectively.
It's received. Thank you so very much. It's a pleasure. Always a pleasure.
Great. And to our viewers, thank you. You know, communication probably in life is the biggest thing. I mean, it's really what we are. We're communicative animals or communicative, you know, beings. And if we can't communicate in ways that people can actually hear us, feel us, and us hear them and feel them, and, you know, what we said, what we thought we said, and what they heard, and same thing on their side, we can certainly solve a lot of the issues in this world, in our practices, in our families, and within ourselves, because that's really where it starts in here. I got a ton, Dr. Liz, I got a ton of pearls today from you, and that neural network is like huge for me, just like, you know, how we just take that, and boom, the web starts going. But please, there are people in your life who I know need to hear this, and you know need to hear this, so pass it with them. And thank you for spreading the message, because our viewership is growing, and we are just excited. We're going to keep coming at you with more great speakers, because people are asking for it. I get comments, emails every week about these. So thank you. Thank you for listening. You know, we drop these every other week, the opposite weeks. My wife and I do a Life by Life West. That's with our younger practitioners, so to speak, from new graduates up to about 15 years in practice. And, you know, what they have to say is just amazing. You know, I think that every person 20 years plus should be listening to those. But they're every other week. And just know that we love and appreciate you. Life West loves and appreciates you. We're behind your success in life. In life, not just in your practice, that's a symptom, in life, in your life, and anything that we can do for you, we are here for you. So for Dr. Liz and I, we'll bid you adieu. Love those around you, hug those around you that need hugging, and just know that you are much more powerful, and all of us are more powerful than we were ever led to believe, and let that power come out and be the light to the world that I know that we're all capable of being. So until next time, we'll see you later. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us today, and for the love, commitment, and passion you emanate every day.
Together, we know we will make this world a better place.